And protocol. So I'd like to bring the meeting to order and welcome everybody, including our new member, Mr. Clancy. As an order of business, we have the minutes from the previous meeting, and I don't know if anybody has any comments to the minutes. If so, great to have them proffered. If not, I'd love to get a resolution to adopt the minutes.
I'd make that motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Wonderful. The meeting minutes are adopted. And as always, there's a lot of things going on at the university. And George, I think that falls into your lap to expound on. So the president's report is next.
About that tailpipe. No.
Yeah.
Well, last we met, we talked a little bit about some of the things that we were anticipating for the week after meeting. With announcements on campus. We made our announcement on October 1st. As expected, the reaction from the affected departments has been very loud and very acute. They have taken a very aggressive posture, which frankly is understandable, about this whole thing. And they have, I am amazed, frankly, at the outreach of our faculty throughout the world. I believe I've been hung in effigy in about 41 countries. And but the campaign itself, which has included a number of extensive emails, numerous appeals to different media outlets, the New York Times, the Washington Post, letters to the editor, online petitioning, a number of other things. It's amazing to me how some of these media outlets actually print things without ever calling us for even a response or a comment. It just gets printed. But, you know, over the last 36 days, we have spent a great deal of time trying to respond to as many of the emails and letters as practical. Some of them are not worthy of a response. Others are. We have had numerous meetings. We had a Senate executive meeting, which was on October 4th. We had a University Senate meeting on October 18th, where a number, I believe 27 different speakers expressed their concern, some in constructive ways and some in not-so-constructive ways. Reference to me and Adolf Hitler in the same breath was a little bit depressing, but aside from that, again, I respect the fact that you know, people have strong opinions and are very concerned about the university. We've had meetings with all of the union leaders, actually two meetings with the union leadership. We had an interview with the local newspaper. We did an opinion piece for the local news for the we had a meeting with the ASP, which is the student newspaper. We had an opinion piece in the local newspaper. I had a meeting, an independent meeting with student association leaders. I also met independently or privately with the French department, as well as on last Wednesday having the fall faculty meeting. And in the near future, we are in the process of scheduling. I'm not sure where we are. I think it's supposed to be next Friday, but I'm not exactly sure. A faculty forum on campus where we can address all of these things you know, as fully as possible. I mean, at the end of the day, nobody is happy about what's happened here. No one is happy about the fact that we've lost $33.5 million in state assistance. Incidentally, that number you are very tired of, and so am I. So I will tell you, with the most recent mid-year cut, it's now $35.2 million, not $33.5 million, because we just suffered another $1.7 million cut from the state of New York, which I have not publicized on campus because I don't think the campus could take another email saying that we have another $1.7 million cut in this fiscal year. So I decided that, you know, even though I'm all for disclosure and transparency, I just didn't think that the psyche of the campus could handle another announcement of another cut. There have been a number of there's been a lot of misinformation that circulated around, really focused around the fact that the people perceive the humanities as being at risk on this campus. Other things that we have created a limit in terms of student participation. Existing majors have to graduate by May of 2012. That we are not going to have any languages in our curriculum except for Spanish, sometimes not Spanish. That only arts and sciences is being cut. That all of the budget decisions have already been made without further discussion. Yeah, the truth of the matter is that the humanities have absorbed the least level of cut of any of the areas on campus, and they will have the least level of faculty cuts on campus. All current majors and minors will have the opportunity to graduate after May of 2012. They'll have until they can graduate. Clearly, doctoral students are not going to be able to rush their process and get out here out of here by May 2012. Languages will continue to be a part of an important part of the UAlbany curriculum. We currently teach 13 languages, and it's entirely possible we'll continue to teach 13 languages as demand requires, going forward. The areas outside of arts and sciences, frankly, have taken greater cuts. The professional schools and have taken a disproportionate cut. Clearly, the biggest cut has occurred in non-academic areas. And at the end of the day, three-quarters of all the job losses that will occur on this campus, the 360-some job losses that we anticipate by the end of 2012, will be, three-quarters will be non-academic employees on campus. The sad part is that, of course, it's as tragic an event when you lose a cleaning woman. I understand that it's from your perspective, it might be different, but for me, anybody who has a job and doesn't have it the next day is a tragedy. I mean, I'm a firm believer in, I'm a Democrat in both ways. So sorry about that, guys. But at the end of the day, the other misstatement that's been out there is that everything has been decided. It's not. Budget negotiations are continuing. We're still looking for alternatives. We're still hopeful of getting some relief in the form of some legislative enactment going forward. I'm very hopeful that rather than present the legislature with a program on a take-it-or-leave-it basis, that we can sort of and actually author a program with the legislature where we can actually submit a program as a team, as opposed to having this model which was, in my opinion, destined for failure. So we will reconfigure the legislation, and we will do it with not only with the legislature's participation, but also with the union's participation, because that's critically important for our opportunity to succeed.
And how will that get brokered? I mean, will somebody?
I'm hoping, frankly, that that SUNY itself will recognize what they did wrong, and I hate these
politically
wrong, and that they've learned from the mistakes of last year. And certainly, there have been suggestions made. I've made them. Others have made them as to how to approach this going forward. But I do. I just got off the phone, incidentally, with Deborah Glick. She had written a letter expressing concern. I decided that rather than write her the pro forma letter, I would call her and talk to her about exactly
about our campus.
Yeah, she and
I find that somewhat ironic, but okay.
Yeah. I mean, and I think she fully acknowledges that that not all of the problem, but a big part of the problem has to do with the lack of funding for the state university. And I think, frankly, we talked for 40 minutes. We were scheduled for less than 15, and we ended up talking for 40 minutes. I thought it was good exchange. And she's a bright lady, and I think, frankly, she really is interested in seeing public higher education get its a fair share of the of what they need to go for. She's clearly a big fan of the humanities and some of the programs. But at the end of the day, I think she's pragmatic and understands where we're coming from and why we had to make the decisions that we are having to make now and will probably have to make going forward. Another important note is if you've read the paper, and of course it appears as though we're the only people in the country that are making any cuts of any kind. But if you I just made a short list of other universities that are doing similar things, LSU, Missouri, University of Illinois, even Cornell. I'm not going to comment on that. University of California, and in the SUNY system, you know, New Paltz, Geneseo, Downstate Medical, SUNY IT have all announced similar types of actions. I suspect that there'll be a lot more going forward. I think our experience has scared off some people, to be really honest with you. And frankly, maybe not for the better. I think that if somebody is looking to actually have a strategic approach to budget cuts and decides that they're going to take a different course because it's the course of least resistance, I don't necessarily know that they're doing a service to their institution, but that's my opinion. The reality of the budget, we've lost 30% of our state funding. The anticipation going forward, the budget's announced last week, the projected budget deficits for next year, 2011-12 budget deficit is projected at now $9 billion. But then 2012 fiscal year, $14 billion, and 2013 fiscal year, over $17 billion. If these numbers are correct, and even if we get a disproportionately smaller amount of the cut, the impact of this kind of numbers going forward on this university is going to be just awful. I mean, we're talking about cuts in the magnitude that are greater than what we've already suffered. And if we, you know, this diminishing pool is going to continue to be problematic for us. We are working really hard at coming up with alternatives for the state funding. I do believe that there is a possibility of getting some tuition relief from the state of New York, significant tuition relief. And if we get some level of maintenance of effort guarantees from the government, this is where I strongly agree with the assembly, and that any kind of tuition increase legislation that doesn't have a maintenance of effort provision is almost meaningless. If we get a 5% or 4% tuition increase, and in turn we lose the equivalent of 8% in budget cuts, it's a regressive tax on our students, because at the end of the day they get nothing for their money. They're actually getting less for their money, and it is the ultimate regressive tax, because our students are the people who are least able to pay for this tax deficit. So with the maintenance of effort provision, where the government, the legislature agreed to a base level of aid, if we get tuition increases on that, then we can build on it, as opposed to continually, you know, being under the gun and, you know, taking in a dollar and giving back $2. I'm hopeful that we'll get that. I think they finally understand the math. We're looking for other opportunities to expand our student base. We're going to work harder at recruiting out-of-state students, because I think that's you know, the mathematics of a $14,000 chair as opposed to a $5,000 chair is very obvious. Even if we have to discount out-of-state tuition to be competitive with their state's in-state tuition, it's still incremental dollars in our coffers, so we're going to have to be aggressive in terms of looking for alternative sources of revenue. We have to continue to increase our focus on fundraising. We have to advance a lot of these entrepreneurial enterprises on campus. I've gotten some interesting suggestions where a few years ago we might not have considered them. One of the bus drivers told me about advertising on the buses. You know, well, a year ago I said, thank you very much. You know, how much can we get by advertising on the buses? Because I may be putting advertisements on our buses, you know, for however much money we can get. There have been a couple of other very interesting suggestions. But at the end of the day, on campus, it continues to be problematic. We are trying to change the conversation. We are trying to direct people to in terms of more constructive lobbying for additional resources for public higher education. We are really hoping that the dialogue with the state leadership changes so that we can basically all be on the same page. We're hoping to have the union on our side as opposed to on the opposite side of this equation, because frankly our interests are aligned. I mean, I don't think anybody in the union wants to see job losses of any kind from any place. you know, there's clearly, we have to be able to have a common ground. I mean, it just doesn't make sense that we can't have a common ground. Anyway, I'll go quickly. I'm going to defer to Sue Phillips for discussion on our strategic plan, Madam Strategic Plan. That's the nicest thing she's been called in a while. But there's a lot of good news going on. I left at this afternoon or this morning. What's it, 11:30? I guess it was this morning. We announced an ARRA construction grant for our RNA Institute of $5.4 million. It's the second largest NIH ARRA, American Recovery and Reinvestment Act grant of any for any SUNY school in the last 10 years. And it is the only grant of a new ARRA, an NIH grant, construction grant, received by a university in New York State without a medical college. So it's and it's significant. It's the second highest grant ever received by a SUNY campus, $5.4 million. It's an exciting thing. It's going to give us the opportunity to build out our RNA Institute. It's and that's a wonderful enterprise because that's actually something that started among the faculty. The faculty literally came up with this collaborative idea to develop this sort of institute, and you know, we went from there. But really, this is from the ground up, so that's important. And Paul Agris is a very good addition to the university campus. Dan Fabrice, we brought him from Maryland. Paul from North Carolina. They are going to do a great job, and there are really lots of opportunities for partnering with the private sector. Private sector partnerships in place. We really haven't built out the facility yet, so that's a good thing. And it's also a really good thing that we were able to produce the kind of competitive proposal that NIH would consider. That was also a joint effort. And Elga Wolford, who's been under the gun for a while, was also instrumental in developing that grant proposal, so she needs to get a little bit of a pat on the head as well. We had a business breakfast here on campus where we talked about the School of Business and the RNA Institute. We are trying very hard to connect with the local business community. That's not for the disadvantage of other people on campus. It's actually to help us enhance our mission here, to the extent that we can partner with local businesses, to the extent that we can generate additional contributions for the university. It's scholarship money. It's money that we can use to better all of the areas, including the humanities and everything else. Chancellor is held the Phase 4 of our Strategic Planning Committee meetings on campus. It was on campus primarily because they were flooded downtown. Very interesting thing where they literally had to move out for a long period of time. I had a meeting there at 8 o'clock this morning, and I noticed that the meeting that's usually held on the first floor was held on the fourth floor. I'm not sure whether it's because I had to raise my pant legs to get up, but we had a tremendous Citizen Laureate function here. Those of you who went to it, it was the record, 575 people. It was the biggest function of its kind that I think anybody recalls. We were able to raise about $170,000 for the university. At that function, we had two terrific honorees, John Nigro and Sally Temple. One was an academic laureate, one was a community laureate, and it was very gratifying to see the amount of support that this university is generating within our community. Rockefeller Policy Luncheon was held, and that was, I thought, a very candid opportunity for us to exchange ideas. My friends in the French department follow me around, and it's okay. I made sure they had a good seat in the forum, and you know, I think we tried to answer all the questions that people asked. Homecoming was terrific. We had a huge crowd, lots of participation, wonderful weather, which I personally was responsible for, and we continue to have a tremendous amount of research activity on campus, and I have a long list. And I was told when I did that at the fall faculty meeting that people were sort of bored, so I won't bore you with it, but rest assured that our faculty is and continues to be extremely productive. I'll answer questions before I turn over the thing to Sue so she can talk about the strategic plan. Yes?
I got a comment and a question. I guess the comment is that Certainly, we appreciate your really putting yourself out on the line, and we know that you're doing it for the right reasons, and I just hope that the support is there from your from the deans and from the your fellow administrators, because it's not easy. I mean, it's hard to be
It's not easy, but the... I agree with you, but I think, first of all, even the detractors, for the most part, are well-intentioned. I mean, it's one of these things where I think at the end of the day, we're all looking out for what we perceive to be the best interest of the university. The vice presidents, the administrators here have been extremely supportive. I think it's been very difficult. I feel very bad for Sue and Elga. I mean, they, you know, clearly, you know, she's the chief academic officer, and it's been difficult for her. Elga is the dean of the College of Arts and Sciences, and that's not a very good place to be for them. I mean, but again, I aside from a few, there are a few things that have really bothered me a lot. But for the most part, if I think about the fact that we're all basically trying to achieve the same thing, you know, I can handle it better.
Right. The question I had is sort of related. And at what point does SUNY intervene as a system in terms, you know, when we talk about what's coming down in the next 3 years? I mean, how does SUNY, at some point, SUNY has to look at this system-wide and say, campuses have to close. I mean, because otherwise...
Or just rationalize the cuts.
Or because we're going to die from a thousand little murders. I mean, this is crazy. And I wanted to ask the chancellor...
But you're right on. I mean, the bottom line is that the University of Albany is not going to be able to sustain this level of cuts going forward. It's just not possible. SUNY, there has to be some level of centralized consolidation. Politically, and most of you guys that have been involved politically understand that closing a campus, when that campus is, in fact, the economic driver for the region, you know, go to some of these rural communities and understand that that is the entirety of their economy, is the university there, or the college that's there. But there needs to be some level of whether it's consolidating administrative functions, whether it's creating partnerships, whether it's merging one enterprise into another enterprise. These are things that they have to look at. There are politically acceptable alternatives to what we have: 64 campuses that are totally independent of each other, with 64 separate administrations and 64 entirely independent infrastructures. Don't work in this environment. You're absolutely right. I've been on that mantra for a long time. I think that this university has actually made proposals on this in this arena. I think the other thing is that competition among the state university is no longer viable. We need to have collaboration. You know, we were talking about submitting grants. So there are grants that we could submit that have an agricultural component to them. We're not eligible because we don't have an agricultural. Why not sit down with Cobleskill and say, okay, this is a grant we can jointly propose. You know, you put in the agricultural part, we'll put in the rest of it. I mean, that's just an example. But there are lots of opportunities. Some of you are aware of things that we're working on that are continuing to progress, but in a different form than we originally discussed, which is kind of interesting, but still progressing. SUNY's the answer. The state model is not a viable model. 64 campuses and 64 redundant administrations and 64 redundant infrastructures just don't work.
Well, I was kind of headed down the same path, and maybe actually, Pierre, this might be a question for you, because one of the things that occurred to me, and unfortunately I couldn't attend the meeting a couple of weeks ago, is, you know, with all the council's meeting, there was an opportunity to at least start trying to work collaboratively, so that, because you could have also the situation where you have 64 campuses all cut Scandinavian studies, as opposed to saying, okay, you cut in this area and I'll cut in that area. I mean, there's any number of ways to figure this out. And I don't know if there was any discussion in your meetings about this, but I think, I mean, maybe we have to take a leadership role here, and I don't know who we talk to or what's, you know, how we get it going, but if we don't, we're not going to survive. I mean, I don't know who survives.
Well, you know, my public mantra is that we will survive and we will be stronger. And that's I just got interviewed by, God knows what it's going to end up by. I got interviewed by the student television station. You know, worst part is it's going to be on a loop forever. It won't be run once, and then I'll be free with it, and then the people will forget. You know, it's like, you know, the newspaper articles that are there, you wrap your fish in them and they go away. But
but nice haircut to this.
I'll tell you a story about this haircut. Let me.
He's still waiting for his money back.
I'm still waiting for my money back. But I know everything about the lady who cut my hair, including her grandchildren, her children, her place, and she kept cutting. But we will call upon you for advocacy. I think it's going to be critically important. I know that Pierre is going to be the new president of ACT.
Yeah. And, excellent.
Yeah. So congratulations. So we have a place on the inner sanctum.
There should have been an opportunity. I mean,
it was hard. Because I was poised to ask the chancellor that question, and I didn't get the vibe that it would have been well received. And it's not her fault. I mean, she was on a fairly tight time frame, and it was sort of like happy time. You know?
She knows. she knows.
I'm sure.
The chancellor. I mean, this is not rocket science.
No.
At the end of the day, she's aware of it. She knows. I mean, I'm on this committee now. That's you know, the budget advisory group and another. I'm on committees. I don't know how to think about it, but you know, there. If you sit in the room and you listen to, you know, everybody has a perspective, and everybody's perspective is geared upon what is best in the best interest of their institution.
Right.
You know, I'm a vocal advocate for what is best for Albany. At the end of the day. Now, I happen to think what's best for Albany is best for everybody. But somehow, I don't think I can convince everybody else that's what's best for Albany is best for everybody. But we do need something at a central level that's going to consolidate or do something where we can, you know, the needs of the whole are, you know, and some of the individuals are going to have to sacrifice.
We need a legislature that's responsive. I mean, I think it's interesting that you had this call with Deborah Glick, and I think that dialogue's worth continuing because
I like Deborah today. Deborah and I get along very well.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, there was a commission a few years ago that said, you know, you've got to revamp the system and do all these things, which the legislature just sort of blew off. So, you know, we got a big problem right there that we've got to address.
Well, I think we need to work with the new governor. I think we need to do a lot of work in terms of with the new governor. I think we need to start getting partners in the legislature as opposed to. And you know, Vince and I have talked about this. I've told them that we need to actually go with a bill that's co-authored by the legislature. We need to sit down with Shelley Silver and say, "Hey guys, here's our problem. Help us solve it. You know, what can or can't we do? And if we can't get the exact language of the public-private partnerships that we want, let's see if we can get an expedited process that'll enable us to facilitate these things in the future." If we can't get differential tuition, give us rational tuition, but with a maintenance of effort provision, which they agree with. You know, they agree with procurement relief. They agree with several of the items there, but we've never gone piecemeal.
We need to construct a SUNY that is dependent on the state for financial support. And they know it, and we know it, and
right.
There's no point in waiting. I mean,
I'm way too old to be able to know that's going to happen. But at some point, where some of you guys are going to be young enough, so you'll see.
Feel scared.
But it's true.
I was in Virginia a few weeks ago, and what they're worried about is not losing all their state support. They're now worried about the state charging them for use of state assets. So I'm telling you, it's coming. Don't laugh. It's coming, folks.
Well, their big issue is that the percentage of out-of-state enrollment. They're saying that they're subsidizing all these out-of-staters.
Right.
And
but they're doing the same thing, trying to increase the out-of-staters to cover the cost. But they're down to about 10% in most of the state schools of state support, and they're concerned it drops so low. I mean, that it'll get to the point where they're going to start saying, well, we funded these assets, you pay us for it. So if we're going to a $17 billion deficit, I can see that.
Well, I we're trying to.
Sorry to make your day.
No, listen. We're trying to create incentive models, and one of the issues of incentive models, you know, in terms, especially in the research side, you know, it's what we want to incentivize, and this is coming from the state, from SUNY, is we want to incentivize going after federal money. Of course we want to incentivize that. Yes. You know, the indirects for federal grants are terrific. We could use the money.
Well, George, I think part of the problem is when you're talking about the legislature, you almost have to develop a roadmap for them and give it to them and walk them through it. It's almost like a remedial thing because their focus is going to be on what their individual communities are and how they see them to see it as a whole and tell them that sometimes what they perceive as socialism isn't a bad thing. I think that, but that's going to require repetitive. And what you said before makes a lot of sense. Getting several of them together and drill it, and then hopefully they can reach out, because it's not just at the university level. The feeder is coming in. The cuts that you're seeing here at the levels of the secondary and elementary, the same kind of thing is happening. They're telling people this year you're going to have to come back from the departments, so you're going to have to at least 1.5 positions. Next year, it's 2.5 positions, and it's going on and on and on. And of course, if you don't get quality people coming from that level, then no matter what you do at this level, it isn't going to happen. So I think that's the way you've got to do it, sort of a grassroots approach, but have a clearly defined message, and then keep pounding that message in, and then show them how the thing connects. Otherwise, you'll get split. If you cut me, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? I would doubt if some of the, what I call problem identifiers, came to you and said, George, I really don't like your approach, but here is a comprehensive plan that I think will really get the job done. It doesn't work that way. I think that I always force people when I get the problem identifiers. I want to see the PIs as opposed to the PS, the problem solvers, and push them into a corner and say, now, what would you do in this situation? But I think if you go at them that way, and I'd be delighted to do it, I know a number of them, to say, here's the plan, here's what we think will work for New York, and we'll, you know, for the whole system. And I think you can just keep pounding.
I had an interesting exchange with one person when I said that, you know, we'd be happy to entertain any suggestions, and the comment was, that's your job. Okay, I just did it, but that's all right. Well, we're getting there. You know, I do think that we will come up with a model that works, because I think it's in everybody's best interest. I think that the legislature and the governor does not want to lose public higher education. This university alone generates an economic impact in this state, in this community, of $3.6 billion. If you tax effect that $3.6 billion, this university, and you look at the amount of state resources that we're a profit center. At the end of the day, we actually make money for the state of New York. We've got to get that message across to people that if we move to New Jersey, the state of New York would lose money. I wouldn't move to New Jersey. We have to figure out a better place. But, you know, they would lose money. I mean, we need to make the argument that they need to understand that we are not the problem, that we are the solution. They need to understand that making an investment in SUNY is just that, an investment with a really good return as opposed to an expenditure. So we're working on it. SUNY, you wanted to address the strategic plan?
So I can't say that this is the most inspiring time of our point in history to launch on a new strategic plan. However, as you know, last fall we started on this process. I believe I talked with you a bit about the design of this. A number of you participated in the strategic planning process over the course of the past year. We began with a presidential strategic seminar, which sort of alerted us to what lay ahead. Moved into information gathering for a couple of months, and then into designing goals and objectives to meet those goals. The Strategic Planning Committee grew along the way, finally submitted a final draft to George on June 1st. That draft then went out for public comment about fix this, fix that, this is the priority. And we also began a process of crosswalking our plan with the plan that was emerging at that point from the State University of New York. As you know, we started this process just around the same time that the Chancellor started hers. We wanted to be not too far ahead of it, but also not too far behind. You'll see how we handled that. So at the faculty meeting just this week, George provided a preview. This is not a full launch, but a preview of the strategic plan in its final form. And I have several versions of it for you today. The short version that I'm going to hand out first provides a quick backdrop of our information gathering process, as well as a statement of our new mission, expanding knowledge and transforming minds to shape the future of our community and our world. It speaks about our values and about our six strategic goals. The six strategic goals will sound familiar to you, especially for those of you who are engaged in this process. They concern undergraduate education, student experience, graduate education, research, infrastructure, and alumni and community connections. You'll see with each goal a statement of our vision of where we hope to be, as well as a set of not more than six objectives of how we're going to get there. You'll also see on this document little blue globes. And as you might imagine, those are places of particular correspondence between our strategic plan and the power of SUNY, the SUNY strategic plan. I also have...
Say that again, Sue. I'm sorry. They aligned, sort of, they overlap completely, or they're just... similar,
this is one of the places where in undergraduate education, particularly objective four, the international component, it connects with the SUNY's global objective. So these are the places where our plan intersects. What the chancellor had asked in the process of developing our plan is that we identify not be on exactly the same page as she is on all items, because we're at a different place, have different needs, but that we articulate some degree of correspondence. And so this speaks to where those parts of correspondence are. While I'm on that topic, let me just tell you that the as we looked at the power of SUNY, which is the university-wide strategic plan, as well as our own strategic plan, which we've dubbed the World Within Reach, we realized that there were actually two points of correspondence. One is what we already do that feeds the power of SUNY, and the others are what lies ahead in our path. So what I've just handed out to you, our abbreviated strategic plan, shows what lies ahead in our path that connects us to the SUNY strategic plan. Coming around to you now is what we already do. And in this one, what we have done is take our activities that are already underway and are continuing and map them onto the six goals called the Power of SUNY. So here you'll see UAlbany and the Entrepreneurial Century, UAlbany and the Seamless Education Pipeline, UAlbany and a Healthier New York, an Energy Smart New York, the Vibrant Community, and the World. If I do say so myself, it's pretty darn impressive.
And comprehensive.
The two documents that I have handed out, so this in effect is a package. Our connection to the power of SUNY is both our own work moving forward as well as what we already have underway. These are the abbreviated strategic planning documents summaries. You'll find them posted on our website, and shortly I hope we will have a video version of it for when we are ready for inspiration. You will also find on the website the balance of the strategic planning documents. I call this the Full Monty. And I brought a couple of copies of those. I'm not sure I have enough for all in the room. Those, if I don't, I'd be happy to get you a copy. This is a quarter inch thick of all of the strategic planning documents. Our strategic planning process actually focused in even more depth than just goals and objectives, but also articulated action plans, as well as identifying potential timelines, responsible units, who should do what, when, and where. Providing essentially a roadmap for accomplishing each goal. As you might imagine, there was considerable passion about every one of these objectives, and all of them needed to have been done this week by me, probably. And so right now there's a process of articulating what should be put up first as the project to be undertaken. So that's where George is now in looking at what the implementation plan should be. We hope to be able to have that out for comment and review in another couple of weeks, and perhaps we'll even be feeling inspired by him. So.
Is the power of SUNY on the same path line, or what's this?
The power of SUNY is they've started their implementation process. They have a series of teams that they have already put together that are already starting work on it. You're on one of them,
yes.
Aren't you? Two of them, three of them. So they're already underway selecting projects for the first go-round. They have even a more challenging process, I think, to deal with because they're trying to amalgamate across 64 campuses, some of which are not, you know, don't have anything to offer on that particular topic, both model programs as well as particular initiatives that Power of SUNY outlines. So they've got quite a bit of work to do. But it's moving along. It's moved into implementation also. So we'll be about maybe 4 or 5 months behind them on implementation, but I'm sure that we'll catch up and, in fact, be a pace ahead of them before we all go out.
I'm sure it'll be good to know where they're going to end up before we finish ours.
Yes, I've been very careful to keep an eye on what's going on there.
Okay. Thank you, Sue. Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
Hey, this is Robert. I figure it's the one meeting I missed. You gave all the good stuff. Would it be possible just to electronically just get at least the first two handouts? I don't need the full Monty, but just I'd love to be able to take a look at that.
Hey, Rob, absolutely. I'll assign you a reading. You'll actually find them. They're posted on the main UAlbany website. If you see the bar on the right, it says strategic plan. It's the first bar on the right. Click there, and you will find all three documents. So you can you can have the full Monty yourself.
It's / strategic plan, basically.
Yeah, / strategic plan.
Okay, thank you so much.
You bet.
Just keep
There's a
thinking,
quiz on Monday.
Keep thinking of the movie, the full Monty. It's very disturbing.
I was going to say.
Just want to follow up on a couple of George's points. Everybody here on the council, you're thought leaders, you're significant, people in the community. We're all stakeholders in this process. Whether by intention or not, it's a very balkanized and fragmented group. Whether you look at the institution, at SUNY or the individual campuses, and it's by nature not easy to coalesce around a plan that makes sense for everyone. Given how you're trying to protect your own interests, I do think there are a lot of common themes that come out, and clearly the expression of the value of higher education, to the citizens of New York, having first just an educated state, and what public higher education provides that can't be provided by other means of education in New York, the economic impact, which people like to highlight. Try and be proactive, but almost defensively as you're, withstanding cuts. And I think the challenge is that, if we, as Dr. Jackson said, if you go and sit down with some of these guys and walk them through it, there's so many other voices and forces here. And, leadership from SUNY, if that doesn't happen, if they can't take this head on, or won't take it head on, it gets harder for the institutions to do it. But, at some point the university centers are going to have to think about it. I know that, President Simpson is stepping down for a lot of stated reasons, but I know, one of the reasons clearly is frustration with UB 2020 and trying to promote and foster that plan. And in some ways, that plan talks about so many things that are great about the system because it's striving for greatness. It has a vision, but it yet was very parochial in nature, too. And it's sort of the best and worst of what SUNY can do for itself, both at the central level and at the campus level. And I think, looking at 2020 and thinking about where on a combined basis the vision of what we have for this institution, this system, is kind of where we have to start. And I know we spent some time earlier in this year talking about that plan and whether it would be permissive for, other institutions, whether it would be just about Buffalo. But I think there's a lot of elements in that, and I know that legislation ultimately didn't prevail. I think that's one of the places to start with the next governor and the next administration. There's going to be a lot of new voices out there, and I know we've had this discussion, you know, when Governor Spitzer came on and the Higher Education Commission, and I think people, you know, were very hopeful with Governor Patterson, and, you know, that hasn't transpired to date. It's a brutal fiscal climate, but people have to be able to come together on a unified basis and demonstrate what they can do for the betterment of the system and for the betterment of the state. And so, I mean, I think as you're out there as voices for University of Albany and as voices for public higher education, and think about where we can be helpful. You know, I think around that legislation, I think there's a lot of pieces in that legislation that are excellent. And, you know, Dr. Jackson, if there's a starting point to think about, you know, maybe where we can look at something and think about collectively what we can do, I would say going back to that and going back to the higher education report and thinking about what we can take away from that and what's pragmatic. You know, there are no solutions, but I think, you know, if you know three or four assemblymen or senators, or you know anybody in the, you know, Governor-elect Cuomo's transition, I think there's a lot of stuff that's been out there, and we don't have to start from scratch. There's a lot of good work that's been done, and you know, trying to focus on some of those points and those initiatives.
You know, Dan, I agree with you. I think that at the end of the day, though, the only way to sell something like this, any kind of autonomy in this environment, is to show why it fiscally makes sense for the state. I mean, that's the only selling point. And I remember back many years ago in Virginia, that's how they sold it to the state legislature, that you know, schools could elect to be whatever, tier one schools, which gave them tuition autonomy, or limited tuition. I mean, it wasn't, of course, complete autonomy. But they demonstrated to the state why collecting tuitions directly, all of those sorts of things, how they could say that they in turn agreed to less state support. I mean, it was a trade-off, and that's the only way, you know, the bargain got cut ultimately with the legislature. And I have a feeling with this, you know, we're going to face the same roadblock a bit. I mean, I think we have to assume.
I think our percentage of state support is about as low as theirs is anyway.
Yeah.
It's too late for us to cut the deal.
Well, I'm not so sure. But I think that you have to show that it ultimately,
you know,
what
I think
it means.
One of the important pieces of that legislation was talking about how to move SUNY off budget. And
right.
There's a lot of risk rewards there in going off budget. But you do get the autonomy, and, you know, you do talk about how do we preserve access to higher education. And I think people were able to demonstrate, frankly, that, you know, you could compensate for the loss of whether it be TAP or other levels of, you know, or sources of subsidy that provide access, that if you get autonomy, you know, you can demonstrate that. And
building
and so,
a building, for example, if you can do it on, you know, if you can do it in effect in the private sector as opposed to through the state, you can say you save huge amounts of money. I mean, there are ways to, and listen, I am by no means an expert on any of this, but I think these concepts of like public-private partnerships, all of that stuff has to somehow be rolled into one ball of wax that's going to be the new SUNY, if you will, that, you know, that will make sense for this legislature to go forward.
Dan,
yes, sir.
I think to build on that point is that this area, I think now, is seeing what I can see as somewhat of a renaissance, in the sense that you've got a chip factory coming in. And when these guys come in, what they want is that not only the business comes, but they want to look and see how their family is going to be taken care of, what the community is like. So they want a special medical center to take care of the sick or whatever their needs are. So the medical center is put in a heliport up to get them down. Then, of course, they look at this university and what its impact is. These things are all connected. And, of course, that's why I'm saying when you're talking to legislators, they have to see how all this thing comes together, how it impacts and so forth. And they have to be reminded that just as those companies come in and they were in other communities, they will also leave if you don't have those kind of services that are provided. So I think that we could probably get support, again, as Susan was saying, connecting with, as Pat was saying, right, as, you know, with the medical center, the university, and all those kinds of services that are provided. And that should also help us in dealing with the politicians. So to see the whole goal or the vision of where you want to go, where you are now, how you're going to get there, and it's going to require that kind of cooperation.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, look, as I think quality of life is one of the reasons why a lot of these entities, whether it's Semitech or some of the following businesses, are attracted to Albany. obviously the state's made a huge economic commitment around Sematech, CNSC, and all the initiatives. And I think we need to just get an appreciation for, you know, when this discussion on the humanities and the cuts to the humanities and the cuts to other parts of the system, is that, you know, economic development and economic impact is important, but you have to have a broad balanced institution, a broad balanced curriculum. And, you know, you have to find a way, to your point about your very safe choice of Scandinavian studies, but, you know, how to comprehensively balance cuts and additions. And again, you know, I think around the nature of what was asked for in the legislation that was proffered earlier this year that didn't survive was, you know, some trade-offs that would provide autonomy, that it would allow the institutions to make those choices, fund themselves, fund their programs, provide access, you know, provide budgetary relief while providing economic stimulus. I mean, the message has to be at a certain level that you have to have the freedom to decouple. You know, you cannot be an agency like DMV is and ultimately survive, because you're going to get this series of cuts one after another, and we're not, you know, it's just not going to provide for a healthy, healthy institution. So, look, the advocacy has to continue, the voices have to continue. You know, and I think a lot of pressure back up to SUNY Central, too, has to be there. I mean, that's where a lot of the pressure has to go. I mean, Michael, you said it wasn't the right point in time to pressure the chancellor, and I appreciate that. I'm sure she never wants to be pressured. And I'm sure she knows the situation, you know, acutely well, what's going on. But, you know, those moments allow people to galvanize and solidify. And, you know, Pierre at ACT, I'm sure that's the same thing.
Well, it might, now it's probably the right time just to figure out how to do that.
You know, and maybe ACT offers, puts together a document that all the councils can sign on to that has, you know, a list of items that we all support. I mean, ultimately, over many administrations, you know, everybody on a council is a government, the governor's appointee.
Right.
So, you know, people all have some level of political activity, political appreciation, and a sense of service to the state, and that's why we're all here. And so maybe ACT provides that opportunity, too.
And each one is probably the constituent of, you know, some of those legislature, you know, folks, so we could probably hit all of them up.
I don't know if anybody else had anything else they wanted to chat about on the council level. If not, we'd move to the report from the student representatives. They're still with us.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Just want to touch on something a little bit lighter right now. We had our speaker series with Barbara Walters. I had the pleasure of interviewing her, and that was an incredible experience.
Which was paid for by student fees, right?
You're covered there.
Okay.
So we did pay for that with the student activity chain. And the Student Association put in tireless hours of hard work. The programming director, in particular, didn't even get to meet with Barbara Walters. I don't even think he had a chance to leave the SEPQ arena that entire time he was setting up. But everyone put in endless hours. There was volunteers that came out in the Student Association, and it was just an incredible, amazing experience. I think the number right now that I heard last was well over 2,000. So we had a really good turnout, and the student population really liked it, and the faculty, and we had other guests. Right now in the works, we're working on getting Bill Clinton to come next semester for a speaker series.
The big dog, all right.
All right, really big guns.
So we're hoping, I know our marketing director, programming director, were in Saratoga earlier this week, as president was there, and they had photo opportunities, and they did present a proposal to the Bill Clinton Society or committee, so they can look into that to see if we can retain him for next semester.
He was at Colgate. I heard really good things about it. That's great.
He's a really good speaker.
Yeah, we've seen. It would be really good for the university overall.
Oh, yeah.
Continue to give us more of an eye of the public. Ms. Bouchard came and spoke to the Student Association, which was very, very, very good. We were able to get questions answered about budget cuts. There weren't many questions at the time, but I think it's important to stress that student leaders, just within the Student Association and outside of the Student Association, are here to be or to deliver messages that come from the president to help ease the tension and the rumors, which are just absolutely ridiculous, that go on because people aren't educated in what's going on. They're not opening up the emails from everyone. They're not reading the president's emails. So not everyone has Albany Student Television. It's looped. It is, but on campus. So a lot of the time, the information's not getting there. So I feel like it is our responsibility to get the right information out so we don't continue to have rumors. So we're here, and we want you to know that we can help in any way. And that's about it for this report. I'm happy to read this strategic plan, and I'm ready for the quiz on Monday. Thank you very much. And if anyone has any questions,
the only one who's ready for the quiz.
Please feel free to.
Maybe we can do a study group after we hang up.
You always want a copy off someone else, Rob.
Rob, the drinking age is 21.
I learned that in business.
Thank you for your time, everyone. I appreciate it. And Bill, please, anything I can do or deliver any messages, let me know. Thank you.
Yeah, Bill, I don't know if you have an alumni perspective you want to share on all this.
Actually, the Alumni Association, we have a lot of good activities going on. We have our strategic planning event coming up this next weekend, which is going to be good. We also are going to have the kickoff of the home basketball opener next Friday night against Cornell, and we're excited with the danger zone. We're going to be out and about rousting the students to come to a big event, big kickoff event for the basketball program, so that's always exciting. And so the Alumni Association is moving forward. We have some great programs. We've expanded markedly the number of programs we have across the board, and we're always in the, we think, a good position to help the university in whatever needs they might have. So we have a very active board. We've morphed the board over the last several years. We've morphed our Council of Classes. As you may know, the affinity to class is different now. The structure of student classes, it's more of a group affinity as opposed to the class of year X. And so we've changed our programming to take that into consideration. So we're doing some great work, and we invite you all to go to the alumni page to see all of our activities, and we're happy to help out if you want to get involved. We have some great programs, and we're always looking for volunteers. So.
Thank you, Bill. Lee, are we going to win that first basketball?
Well, Bill, we had both the basketball coaches at a luncheon at the Alumni Association luncheon on Wednesday, and our women are playing at 5 o'clock against Brown. So it's Ivy League night, Dan.
I'm wearing purple, don't worry.
And we're going to win both of them.
Okay, wonderful. That's great. Thank you. I don't have old business unless somebody has old business that they want to raise. Under new business, speaking of purple, Chris, I think change to community rights and responsibilities.
Okay. I mentioned last spring that we wouldn't wait until the end of the school year to bring the changes to community rights, that we would do them as they came up. So the first change that we have that we want to put into effect, we sent out to you in your packet of information.
Yep.
But just to give you the essence of what the change is here, we're changing where the responsibility lies for granting permission to a student to store a weapon on campus. And previously, if a student wanted to store a weapon on campus, they had to go to the conflict resolution office and get permission there first. But we want to switch that from conflict resolution directly to university police, because university police are really better equipped to determine, you know, what's the nature of the gun, does the person have a permit, etc. It should also be noted that any weapon that's stored on campus in UPD that belongs to a student, this authorization has to be signed off by the president. So the student fills out the form through UPD. UPD does all of the checking that's necessary, and then President Phillip needs to sign off on that authorization. There's a storage facility in UPD where the gun is stored, and if a student wants to get it for, you know, hunting purposes or whatever, they have to go over and get it there. It should also be noted that we haven't had a request for this since 2004.
I was just going to ask.
Exactly what was on my mind.
Yeah, it hardly ever happens. But it's really not something that belongs in conflict resolution.
I was going to say guns really and conflict resolution, the same sentence. Disturbing.
In the last minute.
The other thing this that we just Texas. Added here was a notation that it is against the law in New York State to have any weapon on school property. So that was a little addition as well. Okay. So that's basically it.
Do you need any action from us?
We just need approval to put it into effect.
Mike, did you?
I did.
Did everybody have an opportunity?
He moved, I seconded.
To read this? I mean, I think it's very common sense. Anybody have any questions for Chris? Anybody want to offer a resolution to put forward this change?
I think we're ahead of you. We're ready to go.
All right. So Mike offered that up. Oh, great. Anyway, we have a second?
Yes.
Well, I'm leaving now. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Great.
Don't forget to check your weapon at the door.
Yes. Is that a euphemism? Okay. Traffic regulations.
Janet. Hi, I'm Janet Thayer. I'm one of the university attorneys here. Given this seems like a rather insignificant matter, given guns and all the budget issues. However, on our campus, we have had a number of new buildings and a number of changes, both in our traffic patterns, but as well as our regulations. So basically, what I'm coming to you before today is to ask that we amend our regulations to take out much of the detail where signage is, whether it be a stop sign, a one-way, a right-of-way, or any of those kind of signage, out of our regulations, and making it just much more general, setting the speed limits and allowing our facilities folks and the traffic safety engineers that are hired when buildings are being planned to set where those signs are with the approval of the VP for finance as well as the president. This is in line with what many of the other SUNY campuses are now doing. Frankly, it's putting the decisions back with the experts, no offense to any of us in this room. And much unlike other parts of our regulations, which have to do with tuition or credit granting or fee setting, where there is much expertise to be offered and many of constituents to be considered, in this case, where we should put stop signs and crosswalks really are up to the safety. This also streamlines our regulations. Frankly, we as a state agency have to go through the State Administrative Procedure Act, which means that any of our regulations have to be published in the State Register for 45 days. We have to come to the council. We have to get all sorts of approvals or no comment from the Speaker of the from the majority leaders, the minority leaders, the governor's office. Then we have to wait a few more days and refile again any approvals. All in all, it takes almost 100 days to amend our regulations. So in keeping with that and trying to streamline, preserve our resources for better use, I do ask that you consider this resolution that we take out this detail.
I don't know. I think you're usurping some of our most critical power
on this one.
I'm going to put on my...
Would anybody like to offer the resolution?
Yeah, I'd be happy to offer the resolution.
Second? All in favor?
I'll
second
it. I don't care.
Pat did.
I moaned. Okay. I think it was McGruff.
I moaned in the scent.
I want a yield sign or something out of this. Okay.
Thank you, Janet. No, we're going to name that new circle over there, the Dan Thompson circle.
Yeah. The Dan Thompson stop sign.
Not the circle.
Last time, Wayne provided a lot of...
Is there a naming opportunity there?
Oh, you've already had it named.
You can have the sign. You can't have the circle.
As long as I don't get a dead-end street, I guess I'm okay. Wayne. Follow up from last meeting.
I think I'll screw it up.
Please do.
George's chair.
I won't tell him.
Don't tell him. At the last council meeting, several of you had questions regarding updated retention and graduation rates, and we weren't prepared at that point to give you an update because we hadn't closed the books on fall 2010 registrations, and that has been done as of last week. So we pulled together some points of interest that we thought you'd like to see. So in your folders, you should have a handout. Before I walk you through it briefly, let me just make one correction. Under the six-year grad rates, the right-hand column, The 65.8% graduation rate pertains to fall 2003 cohort, not 2004. And the 67.4% six-year graduation rate pertains to 2004 cohort. So that makes sense, 2004, six-year graduation rate, we're in 2010. I think it was just...
See, we can add at this school.
Did anybody pick up on that? No? Nope. okay. First-year graduation rate using fall 2009 cohort, so those are the students who have returned for 2010, is at 85.8%. And you see well over a percentage point from the previous year, so
right.
We've made progress there. We continue to struggle, as many institutions do, with students finishing in four. That just kind of is not happening these days. But the six-year graduation rate, our most recent graduation rate, has jumped from 65.8% to 67.4%.
How does that compare with other SUNYs or... You know.
We haven't gotten that far yet, but we're okay. we're working on it.
Interesting.
I think it's pretty respectable.
I think it looks like so it would be.
What is more impressive? Yes.
I don't have any real basis for this. Did these numbers used to be like much higher? Is what I mean. So like 4 years used to be like 70% or something, and it's dropped over the years.
Probably,
to 50?
And a trend that you would see at many institutions.
Yeah.
As
okay.
a matter of fact, most reporting agencies require 6 year graduation reporting, right. not 4 year
yeah.
graduation, because the culture has just changed so much dramatically. People yeah. working, stopping in, and backing back
okay.
and forth. So. I wouldn't be surprised if 20 years ago it was more like 70%. That wouldn't surprise
okay.
me before you graduated. What is even more impressive to me, and you don't have this in front of you, last night I was digging, looking at the sophomore to junior rate, conversion rate,
okay.
Because that is an area of concern.
Right.
That's where we lose a considerable number of students during that period from sophomore to junior year. The 2005 cohort, the retention rate was 73.1%, but the 2008 retention went up to 75.1%. So we are seeing improvements at that sophomore to junior
and
transition
stay
period.
Here, so if they transfer out, they're considered not a retention.
They're gone, they're, right.
Yeah,
right.
Good.
They've actually stayed here. So we're making progress in an area that had been of concern, small as it might be, but moving in the right direction. There were also questions regarding the EOP program and their retention rates. You see first-year retention rate for the 09 cohort at 93.9%, four-year rate at 49.1%, and the six-year graduation rate at 68.5%, which is above our overall rate. And then our traditional admits. This is kind of our regular pool. So no special admits, no EOP students in the
right.
traditional admit the first-year graduation rate at 85% and four-year graduation rate at almost 51%, and 66% is the six-year graduation rate. I have other cohort groups that I can break it out at a future meeting if you like, if you're interested, on the scholars, for example, or by ethnicity, or in-state, out-of-state, or however you might want to see it. But I thought this is giving you your last round of questions, what you were interested in, and knock on wood, I think this is a point of pride for now.
That's great. I
okay.
keep thinking of that old line from the Animal House, 7 years of college
yeah,
down
right.
the drain.
7 years.
Yeah. The best 7 years of my life.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Wayne.
That movie is.
You know, Pierre, I think you wanted to offer some thoughts update on ACT.
Just a couple of minutes on the Association of College Trustees. We did have our annual conference, which was at the Desmond a couple of weekends ago, and we were hosted as the welcoming campus. The University at Albany did that. We had the Earth Tone singing, and we had some great participation. Wayne welcomed the group. On behalf of George, came on Saturday morning when the chancellor spoke for most of the morning and stayed for most of the morning. As George mentioned, I was I left the room and was elected president of the trustees. But very excited about the office gets an observation seat at the SUNY board meetings, the next one being on the 17th of November, which I hope to go to New York for, or the 18th. And a number of the points that the initiatives that ACT is going to do is that we're going to actually have an executive board, which is representative from each campus. So each campus will have an opportunity to sit in on the meetings that we have and ask that they become the point of contact for increased communication to the campuses on behalf of the Association of College Trustees. We're going to have some regional meetings in conjunction with the government relations folks at SUNY Plaza to become more proactive. And we're very pleased that the addition in the folder on Binghamton, Stony Brook, and Albany, and Buffalo. Buffalo has always been supportive of ACT in attendance. We had representatives from Stony Brook, and we had the chair of Binghamton at the ACT conference. So we expect to have a strong following from the university centers and the other senior colleges and tech schools. So I appreciate the support that we got from everybody here that attended the meeting. I think particularly Stephen, who sat through the evening and the whole day, the next day, and did a great job and represented the student representatives from the college trustees well. So look forward to further communications, and I think a number of the things that that you're looking for as far as governance. I know there's some talk at SUNY Plaza of taking a look at the whole statutory responsibility of council members that's in the works, too. So I'll keep reporting back.
It would make sense to change that if some of these other changes come down the pike, as we hope they do. I think you'll need more of it. You'll need a stronger statutory charge.
That's right.
Thank you, Pierre. Just want to make sure that everybody, including Susanna, I don't know if you wanted to, if anything you wanted to say. I think we've heard from everyone else. I know you're on the teacher side here.
Yeah, I'm one of those language teachers, but I'm not in French or Italian or Russian or classics. I'm speaking from a sample size of one, so N is kind of small. But I do talk to a lot of people on campus, and my impression is that there is, to my mind, a kind of surprising groundswell of sympathy toward the decisions that George has had to make. It's not a popular thing to say in the halls, particularly of the humanities building, and so I don't. I think that increasingly the faculty are realizing the gravity of the situation. Sadly, because over the years we often hear about budget crises, I think many of us have become kind of inured to the rhetoric. And now I think the message is coming through, sadly, because of the magnitude of what we're looking at, that we need to pull together and we need to be constructive. I can't speak for everybody, but my impression is that that's sort of the majority feeling.
It's good to know.
Thank you. It's an important voice. Next council meeting, Friday, December 3rd. Yeah. There is, in the interim, for those of you in New York, George has a lunch on November 16th. I don't know who can attend. And then I think everybody got the notice about winter commencement, and everybody's invited to that. And it doesn't have quite the pop of the spring commencement, it's really an impressive commencement ceremony and a wonderful group. So if you have the opportunity to attend that, put it on your calendar, please. And I think with that, we're adjourned. If I get a motion for adjournment.
And one more. One housekeeping item. I shared with you the listings from Stony Brook, Buffalo, and Binghamton. Because as I've been looking at our website, we're about to upgrade the University Council website, which is within the university's website. If you go to the A to Z index and look under U, you'll find the photographs. Jim, thank you. We got your photograph today. All the new photographs. And next to our, Pierre, I'm sorry.
Or go to ACT and punch University at Albany and we're there. Go right to our page.
ACT. Okay.
But go to Google and search all, Rick.
But you'll notice that there's a bit of a difference. At Binghamton, you'll see all they had on their website is the names. When you go to Buffalo or Stony Brook, they have a little bit about each person, sort of just one line. But if you hit the name in one of the instances, I think it's Buffalo, you get a whole biography of the person. So I wanted to ask you, since right now all we have on our site is your name and your hometown, and you think, what do citizens want to know? They may be interested in where you're from. More likely, who are you? And so I wondered whether you as a council would want to have at least under your name one other item. Attorney, accountant, professor, business person, investment person, banker, bankers, whatever. That sort of thing. So I really wanted to throw it out by giving you the examples of the other centers, the four centers. And if you think you'd feel comfortable with it, I was reluctant to go too far with your name and address and your phone number. I didn't know how you felt about that part, but I thought this is something sort of in between. Below each one, we could have one line that you would give me, and we would put that on. Now, we haven't upgraded the site yet. Probably be next week now that we have all the photos taken. So I could use your counsel, or if you'd like to think about it, or however you'd like to address it.
I think this is Rob. I think it's a great idea, and, you know, for a university as large as ours, and it's a public institution where, you know, we can basically Google information on everybody, I think we should be forthright and let people know who people are and even give more than just a one-line description. I'm not talking about a tome, but, you know, a small, just a background, like who these people are. Because if we are, you know, pushing ourselves out and have a mandate to try to make ourselves more known and out in the university community at large, then I think, you know, the biggest voice of that is going to be the website. And this is something I've been pushing for basically since we got on here, because I was trying to do research on who the university council was when I was one of the councils to the governor, and I couldn't find anything. I had to make phone calls, and I just thought that was kind of crazy. So I would advocate for being as open, notorious, and under claim of rights.
I think hostile is the last part of that.
Possession, but just to be as open as possible and transparent.
So you have his home address and phone number.
No, I don't have Rob.
I definitely agree with Rob that more information is better. Sometimes students may be looking to make connections. And
Why can't you just send around a questionnaire and everybody will fill it in by email? Just have an email in kind of thing, and people just fill in the stuff and they deliver it to you. Are you guys set up one of those, or do you want
I actually
to
go
it?
The
I mean,
other way. I kind of, I mean, I think it's better than, I don't think you should just have a name. I think that, you know, I kind of think Stony Brook is fine, or Buffalo without the biography, you know, is fine with me personally. Because, quite frankly, if I want to find one of these people that's here, there's enough information for you to track them down if you really want to track them down.
So, I mean, I'm just talking about send out our firm bios, you know, and just have some basic high level who, what, where, when, who the people are. I mean, you don't need any family names and that sort of stuff, or like address and phone number.
But certainly, it's nice to
look. We've got a very esteemed board, and a lot of people, and you know, as someone said to me once, you look good on paper, and so they meet me. But you know, I think we should tout the fact that we've got an accomplished number of people here, and we care. We're here because we're not getting paid for it, because we care about the place, and. You know, I'm proud to say, and it actually will look good for all the SUNY graduates to show how many actual SUNY graduates are here, to the extent we decide to, you know, put where, you know, well, college information on there. But
see, that's why I kind of like the way that Buffalo
is. Again, I agree with Rob. Brief bio.
I'm on it right now. The Buffalo one is obviously a lot bigger than ours, and, I mean, we have all this kind of stuff. I mean, all of us have these bios that we can provide.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I mean, I sit on a couple of these boards where they do this, and I will tell you, they're the people that put one sentence in, and that's all they want, because they don't want any of their information. And then they have others that are there with 3 and 4 pages listing everything they've ever done since, you know,
well, I think
the
we
age
should
of
come
and
up
so,
with a common format.
I think yeah, unless I they're going to be very similar in terms of exactly content, you know, it looks ridiculous.
Every one of these are pretty normal.
What, Stephen had a comment?
No, I agree. This is such an important council, and no one knows what it is. This is what governs the entire school, and I think people should know who their representatives are, representing them with all the rules that are made. And if we come up with some type of common thing that goes out in an email, even if it's a short bio, so no one's putting in a three-page essay of their life story, something common that maybe we can come up with a few ideas and enhance our website for the University Council and be better than the other university centers and have a little bit more of a shine for what University Council is.
Bill.
I'll put in my 3 cents. If I had my druthers, for me personally, it would say President, University of Albany Alumni Association, and underneath it would say what my regular job is.
You have a job?
Deputy Council, right. New York State Board of Elections. And
why don't we do this? To John's point, Fallon, right. and in the spirit of providing more information, I think, you know, first of all, on the left-hand side, just knowing, giving people reference to the state education law, some other elements about the council and what it does, that's great. I mean, I think, Sorrell, we can work with some information that has, you know, a little bit more description than just the name, not so far as a bio, but perhaps, you know, when you're appointed, your term, a couple other things that are just some common information for people to have. We'll send that around. People can comment. We can send it around by email, and Sorrell, people can take comments whether that's too much, too little. And ultimately, if somebody wants to provide a little bit more or a little bit less, I'm sure we can accommodate that. So why don't we start with doing that?
Yeah, I'll prepare a draft and share it with you, Dan, and then we can see how it looks first. Okay,
great.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, everybody. Constructive meeting. May I get a motion for adjourn?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
I always want to do this.
I'll send you a bill for the knock on the table.
Guilty. I think that's a good idea.
Thank you, Bob.